Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, October 8th, 2015. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
I'm good, man.
Awesome. Glad to have you here. Also, Dave Hamilton. I hope you're doing well.
Yeah, I'm doing very well. Thanks, Jeff.
Awesome. It's great to have both of you here. It is also great that Downcast is our sponsor this week. I'll talk about them soon. But before we get to that exciting news, I think we need to take a look inside our iPhones real quick.
Because how deep inside our iPhones? Do I need to get my x-ray machine out?
I think you need to get your x-ray machine out, Dave, because we need to see inside all the way to the guts of our iPhone. We need to look at the processors in these things.
All right. I'm in.
All right. So it turns out there's a bit of a right kerfuffle right now about which processors the various iPhone 6S and 6S Plus models have. And well, we know it's an A9X processor. The people are getting, a little wound up about who made their processor, because some come from TSMC and some come from Samsung. That's not that big of a deal, except that some people are saying that they are seeing differences in battery life based on which processor is in their iPhone.
That's interesting, Jeff. How are people testing this, finding two different iPhones and just running them down, doing the same thing?
Well, you can use Geekbench to test battery life overall. It has a tool in there to do that. And people are doing things like playing movies and doing stuff that's going to be processor intensive. And so what they've been finding is that there is a difference. It is it's a noticeable but not huge difference overall between the processors. And as far as battery life goes, and to cut to the chase, it's the Samsung processors that are being less friendly with our batteries.
Yeah, and it to be fair, it's the difference on these is a topic of debate, the difference of battery life. Some people are seeing it as very negligible, but reportable, right? I mean, you know, a couple of percentage point differences, but repeatedly, yes, the TSMC batteries are, or the TSMC-based iPhones are getting longer battery life. However, some people are reporting it to be as much as 2 hours difference in battery life when doing the Geekbench tests.
And that's pretty substantial.
Well, it is substantial when you're talking about, you know, again, with the Geekbench test. So probably not real world conditions, but, you know, Geekbench takes 8 hours to run the battery down on a TSMC based device. And when it takes 6 hours on a Samsung based device, percentage wise, that's a pretty significant difference. So again, there are very limited reports out there, but it's developing more, you know, more and more people are testing. We would love to hear what you know about this, folks, and specifically if you have a phone, test it and we'll tell you how to do it.
Right. Now the first thing I'm betting people are wondering is, how do I know what chip is in my iPhone?
That's going to be step number one. That's right. Geekbench doesn't tell you.
No, it doesn't. But Dave, I bet you have a way for people to figure out what chip's in their iPhone.
Yeah, there are a couple of ways. There was an app that was available in the App Store, the iOS App Store, called Lirum Device Info Lite, L-I-R-U-M. Don't worry about writing it down, because at the moment, it is no longer available in the App Store. It may come back, but my guess is it was reporting more information than Apple allows apps to report. And this latest battery, you know, the interest in battery life and the type of CPU was more was enough to draw Apple's attention to it. That would be my guess, because Apple is, especially with iOS 9, some things change specifically. You can't see process info, and we don't know how Lirum Device Info Lite was getting this info. So that's off the list. If you want to do this on your iPhone, the only thing that we know of at the moment is an app that is unsigned by a developer that calls him or herself Hiroku Jira. And we can put a link to that in the show notes, they will walk you through how you have to, you can download this app directly to your iPhone, but then because it's unsigned, you have to go and trust the profile that came from the developer. We have no reason to suggest that this developer is either trustworthy or untrustworthy. So that's going to have to be a decision you make. For what it's worth, I trusted the app on my iPhone, ran it. I already knew what processor I had because we'll tell you about another method that we found. It confirmed that and then also showed me their stats about everyone that's uploaded data. And you agree to upload just the processor. There's no personally identifiable data according to the developer. So that is your choice. The one way that we have found to do this that does not come with an unsigned app is by plugging it into your Mac and running a third-party app called iMazing at iMazing.com. And that app, if you highlight your phone, you can run it for 15 days for free. Plug it in, plug your phone in. You have to trust the app and then click on your phone, go to the file menu, choose Get Info, and way down in the hardware model listing or line item of your phone's advanced info, it will tell you whether you have a processor. Here's the deal. A lowercase m in the hardware model indicates you have TSMC. The lack of a lowercase m in the hardware model, and that is M as in Mary, indicates that it is Samsung. And I have a Samsung chip in my phone.
And I have a TSMC in mine.
Okay.
And I've got Samsung. Here's the interesting thing to me about this. The smaller the architecture in general, the lower the power consumption. So it's interesting to me that we have a specific implementation of two different processes being used to build the same chip. And the larger of the two processes is the one that actually is giving you more battery life. That seems counterintuitive to me, but I'm not, what do you call them, engineers? I'm not one of those.
No, you live near a train station, but you're still not an engineer.
The other kind. Well, yeah, I do have that, and I'm the king of the hobos, but I'm not an electrical engineer.
Well, so, yeah, the reports are that again, as you mentioned, TSMC's 16 nanometer process being superior to Samsung's 14 nanometer process in terms of power consumption. And that's actually been something that's been surmised for a while by the folks at Geekbench and elsewhere. So there probably is a very good reason for this, although if you simply look at the size of the chip, I think it has more to do with the fabrication process than the resulting size that is the predictor or the deciding factor in battery life.
Now, I'm surprised that we're seeing any noticeable difference at all. I have a hard time picturing Apple getting these A9X processors from two different companies and just assuming that they both perform the way they expect.
Oh, we don't really know if that's what happened.
No, but if there was a noticeable difference, some of us are screwed. Yeah. Okay. So where I'm going with this is if there was a noticeable difference between performance from any factor with these chips, I can't imagine Apple would have been okay going forward with that.
Right. Yeah. And again, that's where, you know, rewind back to the beginning of this segment. There are people reporting their testing shows this significant difference. It remains to be seen how widespread that significant difference is, or if perhaps these reports can be chalked up to an anomaly, you know, that's unique to the phones being tested. Maybe there's something running in the background on one of these phones. Just because you've gone to the task switcher and quit all your apps means nothing. Apps can still run in the background, even if you don't see them in the task switcher. So it's, you know, it's possible, say one of them's got Skype running in the background, you know, and it's just chewing up battery.
Or Facebook gobbles up power.
You know, and let me get on that rant for a little bit. I have Facebook background updates turned off I so always I. have. Okay. And I have been noticing that battery life on my new 6S Plus has been actually pretty horrendous, to be honest with you. And last night, I went in and looked at the last 24 hours of usage. And of course, with iOS 9, I can hit the little clock icon. So we're in settings and battery. Wait a second as it loads, and then it'll show you details. And there's a little clock icon. I don't know why it's a little clock icon, but when you click it, it shows you the, well, I guess because it's time. It shows you how much time the app has spent using the CPU while it's the frontmost app and how much time it's been using in the background. The Facebook app was showing hours in the background and minutes on screen. I don't get that when I have background updates turned off, but sure enough, it's...
I don't get that either. And, and I'm seeing the same thing. There's a lot of background activity for Facebook, and I don't have background activity turned on. As a matter of fact, I shut it off several months ago.
Yeah.
And I was so annoyed with what it was doing that I took to the internet to complain about Facebook being a bad citizen with battery usage. I even wrote a tip about how to check and see what's sucking down your battery.
So it's either that it is ignoring the setting, which wouldn't be surprising given that Facebook has tight integration with iOS and probably can do things that other developers can't, or that the reporting in the settings battery thing is incorrect and it's not actually background usage. It's just something that's being reported that way for whatever reason. But regardless, the Facebook app chews up a lot of battery. So if that were on one of the phones being tested and not the other, in theory, that could impact the results in a significant way. So, we need to see more and more testing being done on this. And my guess is, I kind of look to the Geekbench folks. They have a lot of this data already, so they'll probably be at the forefront of that. We'll keep you posted.
Yes, we will. Yeah. So in the meantime, listeners, let us know what chip you're running and if you're seeing any battery performance issues. Now that you know how to figure out what chip is inside your iPhone, you can hit me up on Twitter. That would be at TMO Daily. You can shoot an email to observations@macobserver.com, or you can leave comments in the show notes for today's episode. I'll be looking all those places to see what you have to say, and I really am curious what processors everyone has. All right. I mentioned earlier we have a sponsor, and that sponsor is Downcast, the podcast playback and management app. And I'm really glad these guys created their app because I like it so much more than Apple's own podcasting app. I like that that the interface just works better for me. I like that I can synchronize where I am between devices, so I can start listening one place and pick up somewhere else, like start on my iPhone and then continue on my Mac. I like that it supports Apple Watch, so I can listen to my podcast easily from there too. And I also like that it costs less than the iSoy chai I go by at Starbucks every day. It's only $2.99. So you should totally check this out because I think it's a fantastic app. And where do you need to go to do that? How about downcast.fm/TDO? And what that's going to do is take you to the place that you need to be on the App Store so that you can pick up the iPhone and iPad version. And it also lets the Downcast people know that you heard about the app through us. So use that URL, downcast.fm/TDO. It's only going to cost you $2.99. Totally worth it. And thank you, Downcast, for being our sponsor today.
You know, by definition, every single person that's hearing this is a podcast listener.
Yeah. It's pretty smart targeting by the Downcast folks.
You know,
yes, it is.
Now that you say that, wow, that is really smart.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Hey, before we move on to the next topic, does this, if I have a Samsung chip in my iPhone, does it mean it would run Android? I asked that in jest. Of course it won't.
Yeah, of course it won't.
But it's
cool,
funny.
Cool story, bro.
Thanks. Yeah, that came out a lot less funny than it was in my head. So I apologize for that, folks.
You know, Dave, the important thing is you entertained yourself, and that's what it's all about.
That's why we do this show. Sure.
That's right.
Not only will it run Android, Dave, worse, it'll run Samsung Pay.
Oh, sorry. Nice.
Sorry, dude.
So I swipe my phone itself through the card reader?
Yes.
Just make it make
well, that's why Apple push really hard.
Them thinner. That's why they're making the phones thinner, so that you can just swipe the whole phone.
Yeah.
See, that's brilliant. That's innovation right there, people.
Save us, Jeff. What's the next topic?
Okay, our next topic is Adobe, and specifically Adobe Lightroom. So here's what Adobe did today. They made Lightroom for iOS, that means iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch, totally free. Now, you've always been able to download it for free, but that came with strings attached, meaning to be able to really use it, you needed to have Lightroom on your Mac.
It was a companion app before.
It was a companion app, yes. And then you also needed to have a Creative Cloud subscription. What they've done is they've taken away those requirements. So Lightroom for iOS is a free photo image editing app that doesn't require that you have Lightroom on your Mac, nor does it require a Creative Cloud subscription at all. So you can just download it and use it to edit all your photos to your heart's content, and you're getting a lot of the same features that you get in the Mac version that you would have to pay for to be able to use. And I'm finding this kind of interesting that Adobe did this. And the reason I'm finding it interesting is because Adobe also had a presence at the iPad Pro unveil event, where they were showing off their image editing, drawing and vector tools, and a page layout sort of app. And then now we get the whole Lightroom totally no strings attached thing happening. And this just reaffirms to me that Adobe wants to own the mobile creative space.
All right.
Yeah, there you go. How can you argue with that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the freemium model, right? We'll give you something that you want, and then hopefully offer you something that you need.
Sure, and it's a proven business model, because it's been working for a very long time for all kinds of companies.
Yep,
and in this case, you're actually getting a really good app, and you're not having to pay for it, and. Well, yes, you will get more out of the app if you have a Creative Cloud subscription, because now it will be easy to sync the photos you're working with into other Adobe products, of course. You don't need that. You can just use it. And they've even added in some of the cool new features that you get in the current version of Lightroom for the Mac. The one feature everyone is just going crazy over right now is the dehaze. And it does exactly what it sounds like. So if you have a photo that you've taken, say, outdoors, and it's really hazy outside, then you run this filter, and it cuts down on that haze so you can see the whatever it is that was actually obscured by the fog or the clouds.
That's pretty cool.
It's really cool, and it works really well. It's one of those features that's akin to magic, because you see it happen, and you're like, how did they pull that detail out of that photo? I don't get it. So, yeah, so you're getting stuff like that. And so when I look at this, what I see is Adobe sending a warning shot over the bow of Pixelmator and Snapseed and other apps that want to be our go-to image editors on our iPads.
What can I put a slightly different spin on that?
Sure.
Adobe was late to this game. Pixelmator, Snapseed, some other companies were quick to embrace iPhone and iPad in particular as image editing platforms, image editing devices, and Adobe was pretty slow to bring that support to Apple's mobile platform. Yeah. Right. Admittedly, they're fixing their mistake pretty well. But I don't think it's a shot across the bow. I think it's more like the oops, we screwed up. So now we got to fix this.
I disagree.
Yeah. See,
because here's the thing. Adobe has. We know about Pixelmator. We know about Snapseed, and we know that they're great apps. The general public trusts the name Adobe when it comes to photographs, right? Photoshop is in the general consciousness, that is the app that you would use. So when you can use an Adobe app on your phone to edit pictures, that's the one you will use. And I think it's
how is that contradicting what I just said?
Well, because you're saying that Adobe's late to the game. And I, while you may or may not be right about that, I don't think the general public sees it that way. I don't think the general public really knows about Pixelmator or really knows about.
Yeah, but a lot of people like know about both of those products that would not have were Adobe here earlier.
Maybe Apple's done Apple has given design awards to those companies. Apple's done a lot to promote them. I'm not convinced Apple wouldn't have done the same thing were Adobe offering this for, as a standalone product on iOS prior to this. I mean, I think it's just part of Adobe's business model. It's like we're not necessarily looking to put Pixelmator or Snapseed out of business. I think it's they want to encourage people to sign up for Creative Cloud. And here's your gateway drug.
Oh, yeah. This is absolutely a gateway drug into Creative Cloud. And some people will see it as that. They'll be turned off because there's people that really don't like the subscription model. But I mean the reality is this is the way a lot of professional apps are handled now.
Yep. And if it's a shot across – Creative Cloud, correct me if I'm wrong, please. But Creative Cloud offers storage, right, Jeff?
Creative Cloud also offers storage.
So if it's a shot across anybody's bow, it's across Apple's with, iCloud Photo Library versus Lightroom.
That's a really good point.
Right, because photos on the Mac is not something that makes even amateur but like prosumer photographers happy. And Apple doesn't intend for it to, right?
But, no, they don't.
Right. Lightroom does. So, here's your gateway drug.
Yeah, and with the iPad Pro coming out, I have a feeling there's a lot of photographers that are going to be really interested in seeing whether or not they can do some in-the-field editing that holds up when they get back to their Mac.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, and if you look at it that way, then it's not even a shot across Apple's bow, right? I mean, in the sense that when Apple announced the iPad Pro, they highlighted no Apple apps, right? They were focused on apps from other vendors all the way through to kind of send that message that this is a pro product. All the pro companies that you already know are here. I mean, I think that was the their intended takeaway. And if that's the case, then this actually kind of furthers Apple's message.
Yeah, I think it does.
Can I change my mind one more time?
Absolutely.
About something? Oh, I don't know. I've changed my mind four times on this as we talked about it. So,
I was going to tell you, you can change your mind, but you have to do it quickly because we're out of time.
Okay, well, then I'll save it for the next show.
Okay, great. Well, then in that case, hey, we're out of time. Thanks, Dave, for being here today.
My pleasure.
Brian, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
It's always awesome to have both you guys on the show. And Downcast, thank you for being our sponsor today. Head over to their website, downcast.fm/TDO, and check out Downcast for your iOS device. It is rocking. I'm really pleased with it. Listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.